Cascade Curations in downtown Reading is a unique destination location. Cascade Curations is a vibrant hub celebrating the creativity and talent of local artists, musicians, and designers. Clothing racks are stocked with upcycled and upscale thrift, as well as new clothing unlike anywhere else. Whether you're seeking beautiful artwork to adorn your home, new music to inspire you, or musical instruments and gear to play, Cascade Curations is a must-visit spot to immerse yourself in Reading's thriving arts and culture scene, located in the Foundry Square next to the Dip.
If the American people ever allow private banks to control the issuance of their currency, first by inflation, then by deflation, the banks and the corporations that will grow up around them will deprive the people of all their property until their children wake up homeless on the continent their fathers conquered.
We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Revolution has started.
Sovereign Minds, now on Sundays, 10 to noon.
From the historic campus of Hillsdale College in Hillsdale, Michigan, where the good, the true, and the beautiful are taught, nurtured, and honored, this is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, bringing the activity and education of the college to listeners across the country.
You know, as we move into 2025, despite the many dangers that we face, there are reasons to be very, very hopeful, not just for Israel, but for the United States as well.
This is your host, Scott Bertram. Welcome to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour, part of the Hillsdale College Podcast Network. That was Victoria Coates, author of the new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. We'll talk with Victoria in depth about that book a little bit later on in today's program. First, we're joined by Dr. Jeremiah Regan. He is Executive Director of Online Learning here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Regan, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Scott.
We are always excited to launch a new online course, and this one is no exception. Totalitarian Novels is available now at hillsdale.edu/new course. You can sign up there. We'll tell you more about that in a minute. Why totalitarian novels? It sounds big and scary. So why do we want to do it, and what books do we discuss in this course?
It is big and scary, but it's also a lot of fun. The course examines 1984, Brave New World, Darkness at Noon, and That Hideous Strength. So we've got four of them in there, and they all show a little bit of a different perspective on totalitarianism. But what our students will come away with at the end of the course is a view that there is hope in courage and in the providence of our Lord.
So who's the teacher for this one? What's the format?
Hillsdale College President Dr. Larry Arne presents a lecture and an analysis of each book, and then he sits down with students from his class, Hillsdale College undergraduates, who took this class with him in person, and discusses major themes, important passages, and because it's Dr. Arne, has a little fun at their expense.
You'll learn a lot, of course, but it's worth the price of admission. Which is nothing, right?
That's right.
But it's worth that price to see Dr. Arne interact with our students if you haven't seen that previously.
It's a blast.
Totalitarian novels. What do the novels covered in this course help to tell us? What can they tell us about the effect that tyranny can have on man?
Yeah. Tyranny is a very old form of government, and there's various definitions, but they all point toward one thing. That is political rule that is bad for those who are ruled. Tyranny is designed to aid those who are in charge, be it a king, an oligarchy, or even the majority in a democracy. What makes tyranny totalitarianism are modern tools, technology, the internet, weapons that can kill large numbers of people at one time. And Dr. Arne brings this point out. Totalitarianism is, in a sense, the complete form of tyranny because it can work its way into every surveilling thoughts and ideas.
Hillsdale.edu/new course for this new one on totalitarian novels. Big picture, how might we contrast the approach of Orwell in 1984 and Huxley in Brave New World?
Well, Orwell and Huxley give us some insight into that because they exchanged correspondence on this very point. Orwell envisions a totalitarian regime that relies on fear and pain, inducing suffering, to gain obedience and order. And really, the aim in that regime is to compel people, and that's a fancy way of saying, hurt them until they say, I love you, where Huxley takes a totally different approach. He believes in a much more peaceful regime, a regime of ease, a totalitarian state that smothers and drowns people in pleasures, sexual pleasures, sensual pleasures, drugs, and keeps them content in consumerism, consumption, and our baser instincts. So these are two competing views of what can dissuade people from living a good and virtuous life, the kind of life we try to encourage our Hillsdale students, both on campus and in our online courses, to lead. These are ways of distracting and diverting people from the good life.
Dr. Jeremiah Regan with us, director, executive director of online learning at Hillsdale College, with a course on totalitarian novels. 1984 and Brave New World are two of them. Darkness at Noon is a third novel. This might be the least known of the books in the course, but I know it's a favorite of Dr. Arnn's. What do you think that he sees in that book?
Well, in Darkness at Noon, we get the only fictional representation of an actual regime. 1984, Brave New World, and That Hideous Strength imagine future totalitarian regimes. Darkness at Noon looks at what it was like living in Soviet Russia, what the experience of a party loyalist who has fallen into disfavor with the party would experience, and the inner turmoil that he has recounting the actions he took on behalf of the party, the remorse he feels for those he hurt, and ultimately his submission to the will of the party.
The final novel is That Hideous Strength, which you just referenced, a C.S. Lewis book. Is this a place where perhaps we can find reason for hope inside the study of these totalitarian novels?
Yes, for several reasons. First, all four of the novels give us cause for hope. In 1984, Brave New World, and Darkness at Noon, the regime is already in power by the time we catch up with the protagonists. We are not in a totalitarian regime of that sort, though there is a risk that we could be. So those three novels give us hope to prevent the domination of that totalitarian regime. In That Hideous Strength, we see a regime in its infancy, trying to gain traction, and I'm sorry to spoil it, but the book's been out for 70 years. They fail. It's also the only book, and Orwell criticized C.S. Lewis for bringing God into it, but it's the only book in which God plays a role. But that means it's the most realistic book, because we know that God superintends all human endeavors and is in control of this world and will ultimately have good triumph. So there's great hope in that. There's hope in less obvious ways too, though. The protagonists in That Hideous Strength seem to do normal, ordinary things. Have conversations, garden, eat meals together, sing, pray. And it seems, in one sense, like they're not doing anything to resist the regime. But those actions, the normal functions of ordinary, pleasant life, are a rejection of totalitarianism. And through the practice of those normal, ordinary, and wholesome things, they develop courage. So when called upon, they're ready to resist.
When it comes to this topic, what's the advantage of studying fictional works as opposed to studying actual history?
Well, you should study both, and you can study totalitarianism in its modern instantiation in our Marxism, Communism, and Socialism course. But what studying in fiction does is it enlivens our imagination and helps us see the ways in which totalitarianism could subsume human life, the ways it could exert control that it hasn't yet. And it helps us imagine the ways in which we could resist it. It helps us imagine the type of lives that we should want to lead, totalitarian threat or not, so that we have a fruitful and satisfying life. And so it's the inspiration of creativity in the soul that fiction brings out.
Is it possible through this study in our totalitarian novels course to learn perhaps how we can help defend our society against a trend or a slide toward despotism?
Absolutely. And as I've hinted at, learning these novels, studying them, enjoying them can help us develop awareness of the threat to our way of life. And it can therefore help us develop vigilance and courage so that we can prevent this type of regime from coming into power in the first place. It's much easier to prevent than it is to overthrow.
If people have taken our online courses before, this particular one on totalitarian novels is going to be a little different in terms of how it's released, at least at the beginning. Tell people what they should expect.
Yeah, if you're familiar with streaming services, you know there's two models. Release all the episodes at once or release them episode by episode. We've used the release all at once model up to this point, but this course in particular is really gripping and engaging, and we want to keep the students hankering for more. So we're releasing each episode Tuesdays and Thursdays, kind of like a college course schedule, until all of them have released. Of course, anyone who is in our early access pool or who donates to support the course will have access to all episodes immediately.
Hillsdale.edu/new course to sign up. Hillsdale.edu/new course, N-E-W-C-O-U-R-S-E. Totalitarian Novels with Dr. Larry Arn and Hillsdale students. Dr. Jeremiah Regan, Executive Director of Online Learning here at Hillsdale College. Thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks, Scott.
Up next, Victoria Coates joins us. We'll talk about her recent book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Owners, landlords, and tenants trust Authority Property Management at 2663 Victor Avenue. They manage a variety of properties, including single-family homes, apartments, condos, townhouses, multifamily properties, and commercial properties. Authority Property Management offers full-time management, including finding and screening tenants, rent collection, financial reporting, and final walkthrough home inspections when they move out. Contact Authority Property Management today at 530-410-6085 and check out their website at authoritypm.com.
Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year and we're very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering the brand new Ruger LCP Max 380 at only $349 and the new Ruger Max 9 at just $395. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. You can find us at 1600 East Cypress Avenue or just give us a call, 530-222-3223.
Attention veterans, did you know that Shasta College and Simpson University have veterans resource centers to assist you in your educational pursuits? These centers offer a wide range of support services, including financial aid, tutoring, IT support, and more. We understand the unique challenges that veterans face and are committed to helping you succeed. Our experienced staff is here to help you navigate the college experience and achieve your academic and career goals. Don't let anything stand in your way. This message is brought to you by Senator Maurice Johannesson, former Secretary of California Veterans Affairs.
Looking for the precious top-shelf flower? Look no further than the Queen of Dragons in the city of Shasta Lake, where they work directly with small, local farmers to bring you the finest flower that fits your price. The Queen of Dragons has the best prices on carts, edibles, concentrates, and pre-rolls. Plus, don't miss happy hour every day from 6 p.m. until close and all day Sundays. Don't just stock up on toilet paper. The Queen of Dragons has great deals, so you can stock up on the best flower for the best prices. So what are you waiting for? Stop by Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard or call 530-238-5638 for details or delivery. That's 530-238-5638. And don't forget to follow Queen of Dragons on Facebook and X at the Queen Dragons for all the latest deals and updates. Support Queen of Dragons, a local business in the city of Shasta Lake, where you will find the most friendly and knowledgeable staff. Queen of Dragons at 5044 Shasta Dam Boulevard. Visit queenofdragons.com or follow us on X at the Queen Dragons.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month, starting at 8 a.m., for the Gorman Law Hour, featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour, starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
Join Aaron Ryan and Bill Cundiff for We the People Radio every Sunday from noon until 2. Our expert guests will give you the whole story rather than a bunch of sound bites. Our commercial-free archives are always available at wethepeopleradio.us.
Sponsored in part by Pape Machinery, located at 3119 Twinview Boulevard, for all your local John Deere ag and turf products. Join us every Sunday from noon until 2, wethepeopleradio.us.
What shall we do about them?
The Ramsey Show.
You actually can help people, and you don't help them by giving them a government program. You help them by showing them the way out. People love me enough to put their arm around me and show me a different way. I didn't figure it all out in my own head. So there's a power to hope, but that's not some kind of false panacea positive thinking way. It works. You can't positive think your way into everything, but you can't negative think your way into anything.
Listen weekdays at noon on KCNR, 96.5 FM and 1460 AM, your talk radio station.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to check out the Hillsdale College Podcast Network at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. We're joined by Victoria Coates. She is Vice President of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation, also the author of the recent book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. Victoria, thanks so much for joining us.
Scott, it's good to be with you and all my friends at Hillsdale.
I like when authors do part of the work for me, that the book is broken up into four wonderful quadrants, which we can discuss. But the very first question is, how did we get here? And here certainly also implies what happened October 7th and the aftermath of October 7th of 2023. How do we get to a point where we see that this terror attack in Israel, and what happens next?
Well, that's very much the reason that I wrote The Battle for the Jewish State, is in, as the shock of October 7th, 2023 kind of wore off through the subsequent spring of last year, I felt like I kept being asked the same questions by a wide range of people, most of whom were instinctively at least neutral toward Israel, if not supportive, mm-hmm. who simply didn't understand what was going on, who grasped the just horrors of the original attack, but then also were befuddled that within hours, not days, but within hours, the pro-Hamas factions were on the streets, and they weren't on the streets in Riyadh and Cairo. They were on the streets in New York and London and Los Angeles. And then within days, the protests erupted across American campuses, and that the young people in America were revealed to be so aggressively, not just anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, but also pro-Hamas, and creating this whole new little radical chic movement with their masks and their kafayas and the whole vogue for taking down American flags in places like Harvard Square mm-hmm. and hoisting Palestinian flags, all of which was accepted by the universities
right.
who accommodated them. That was extraordinary. So I, you know, the first chapter of the book gets into why all this goes on. I know this is not a disease that besets Hillsdale, but it does beset the vast majority of the other institutions in this country. And it's something I think we have to deal with.
We saw something I think utterly left my mouth agape as Kamala Harris was considering vice presidential nominees, running mates. You always have, you know, this person, here's pluses, here's a minus. And as Josh Shapiro's name was in those conversations, almost everywhere when you saw a list of minuses, essentially it said minus, he's Jewish, which explained a lot about how the left was approaching the topic, explained a lot about how the Democratic base was fracturing in some ways over this incident. Do you see that kind of approach continuing on the left in this country in the years to come?
No, it's very, very real. And, you know, my old boss, Senator Ted Cruz, wrote, I was very honored, he wrote the foreword to the book, and he wrote about the testimony of the three college presidents in December of 2023 mm-hmm. when Elise Stefanik really broke onto the national stage by grilling them to call the systematic targeting of Jews genocide, and they wouldn't do it. And what it sort of pointed out to me is that this then becomes a political problem for the left, because mm-hmm. if you look at the demographics of the folks who elected Joe Biden in 2020 and prevented the red wave in 2022, that is disproportionately the youth vote. That's the 18 to 29-year-olds. And they are the ones, as I said, that are disproportionately at this point anti-Semitic, because this is what they're being taught primarily in college, but it's also present in high school curricula as well, that Israel is illegitimate, that state is, regardless of its method of government, imperial and racist and illegal. But I was at a Jewish community event for Dave McCormick the day that happened, and with John Thune, now the Senate Majority Leader. And I think John and Dave and I were the only people in the room who weren't Jewish. And it was literally an hour after that decision had come out. And the response in the room was really shock, because everybody knew the whole reason he wasn't picked was because he was Jewish. Mm-hmm. And that came as deeply chilling to that community. The folks who were in that room tended to be conservative anyway, but not all of them. And, you know, many of them were just there because they were interested, you know, in the race. But to a man and to a woman, everybody, it was very chilled about what it said about the politics of anti-Semitism in America.
Victoria Coates with us, her new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. The second portion of the book, why is Israel the partner of choice for the United States in the Middle East? The security partnership between the U.S. and Israel, does it work in our favor? There are some critics who would say, oh, our partnership actually puts us in more danger. If we weren't connected, we would not be pulled into Israel's fights. How does the U.S.-Israel partnership actually keep us safer?
Now, this is a really important question, and a lot of the foreign policy elites, and particularly here in the swamp in Washington, will be very dismissive of the American people when they have the gall to ask that very question. You know, this is something that's very far away from us, from our daily lives. Why should we invest billions of dollars into it, and why should we potentially link our security to it? And so I think it is beholden on those of us who do value the relationship, who do think that investment is worthwhile, to explain in terms that make sense why this is. And what we've seen over the last 76 years of Israel's existence is the transformation of a tiny, almost untenable attacked state, made up largely of refugees from Europe, but from other places as well, increasingly refugees from across the Middle East, where Jews were being persecuted, come together to form what's now one of the top 20 most powerful nations in the world. And that transformation, a lot of which has taken place during my lifetime, I hate to date myself this way, but when I was born, Israel was 20 years old and in the midst of a series of potentially existential wars with Arab nation states, and it's now 76. And that makes me old enough to have a daughter who's a senior at Hillsdale, which we're very fortunate about. But what I've seen over my life is that transformation of Israel, and the security partnership, which was actually codified under President Reagan. It's one of Reagan's unsung achievements. And one of the great themes of the book that I found most fascinating, and it gave the book its cover, is missile defense. And when Reagan announced the Strategic Defense Initiative, SDI, in 1983, the words he used could have been, uttered by any Israeli prime minister, mm-hmm. that we are going to preempt them from attacking. Nobody ever went to war with something called missile defense. And then that cooperation over the decades, has now led the candidate for president, President Trump, saying on the campaign trail that he wants to put an Iron Dome, which is the name of Israel's proprietary missile defense system, over all of America. So that has been enormously productive.
We'll return in just a moment and continue our conversation with Victoria Coates, her new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Alan Gordon, Coachmaster Auto Body. You've been in an accident with your vehicle. You call your insurance. The first thing they do is tell you where to go to get an estimate and repairs. Well, tell them where to go and come see us at Coachmaster. They're sending you to their discount repair shop to get the cheapest repair possible. This is not in your best interest. You have the right to choose Coachmaster to do your repairs. All we need is your claim number, and we can handle the entire process. At Coachmaster, we don't repair your vehicle for the insurance company. We repair it for you. We use quality parts and products to ensure the highest quality repairs. Your vehicle will be returned to a pre-loss condition. And yes, If we can't fix it, no one can.
Coachmaster Collision Repair continues to be the leader in the North State for advanced technology in the collision repair industry. Remember Coachmaster on East Side Road. Learn more online at CoachmasterAutobody.com.
Ready to turn your dreams into reality? At Simpson University, we offer a private Christian education that enriches your academic journey with faith and purpose. Whether you're pursuing your undergraduate degree, completing your degree, or advancing through graduate studies, our dynamic programs, personalized mentorship, and vibrant community are here to support you. Discover how Simpson University can help you achieve your goals and grow spiritually. Visit SimpsonU.edu today to learn more. Simpson University, where your potential is limitless.
Join me for the first Thursday of every month at 6 p.m. for my show, North State Now. In this one-hour show, we cover what's happening in the music scene, theater, food, and arts. We get in-depth interviews with local business owners, musicians, actors, and authors. Listen in, tune in, call in, participate. Win tickets to concerts and theater productions. It's a lot of fun, and believe me, it keeps us going. Join me, your host, Linda Bott, for North State Now, the first Thursday, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM. Also streaming at KCNR1460.com.
If you're tired of artificial intelligence and dishonest news, tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday at 8 a.m.
Join Nick Gardner and Doug Janke, two hosts who were educated at School of Hard Knocks. Get a layman's view of local government as well as our take on national and world events.
If you're woke, go back to bed. You won't like us. We believe there's a difference between a man and a woman, and I think you probably know what it is.
Tune in to Poke the Hornet's Nest every other Sunday, 8 a.m. here on KCNR1460.com, 96.5 FM, and 1460 AM.
Now, this is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
Even cooking sometimes. People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
We're back on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. We've been talking with Victoria Coates. She's the author of the new book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. Victoria, so why does this partnership not just make our lives safer, but make our lives also better?
Oh, it does in so many different ways. And this is one of many things the United States and Israel have in common. One is the innovation of our respective populations is a national security treasure. And it's something that totalitarian regimes stamp out. Not that it's impossible for their populations, but it's impossible under their current leadership. So you have, Russia with very little in terms of innovation. You have China, stealing intellectual property around the globe, but particularly from the United States and Israel, because they don't develop it in their own people. And, Israel, a country of 9 million people, has won an extraordinary number of, I'd have to look it up in the battle for the Jewish state, but Nobel Prizes in the sciences. And one of the things, the people who are opposed to the boycott, sanctions, and divestiture movement, which is supposed to isolate Israel, is like, well, you can do that, but you're going to have to stop doing things like using an iPhone, and you're going to have to stop doing things like using a GPS app like Waze, and you're going to have to stop eating cherry tomatoes, because those are all Israeli inventions. So communicating, moving around, eating, these are things you might have to give up if you decide you want to espouse BDS. And it's amazing how quickly that shuts them down. But, you know, this is a huge strength. And the more we partner with them, I mean, it's just recently been announced that NVIDIA, even with the state of war that's going on, is investing another $500 million in an AI research center in northern Israel. You know, even with the threats, even with the security environment, it is worth it to NVIDIA to make that kind of an investment in Israel, because that's where the innovation is.
Victoria, the third section, is there an alternative? And I was reading your description of President Obama and his pivot to Iran, and in particular, the green movement that sprang up in Iran. And many Americans were curious why more wasn't done to support the green movement in its effort to change, to enact hope and change in Iran. What happened there? Why was Obama and the administration so hesitant to move?
No, it was curious living through it at the time. And the green movement, the revolutionary movement in 2009 in Iran, really sprang into action right after the Obama inauguration. I think because the people of Iran were hopeful that Obama would be supportive of them. And certainly it would seem from the outside to be on brand for him. But what was less known now, and I go through in the battle for the Jewish state, is that he had already made his mind up that the way to peace in the Middle East was to reject the Bush era policy of no daylight between the United States and Israel. His argument publicly made was that that had not led to peace, so he was going to draw back from the Jewish state, and that he would look for offsetting alternatives. And for him, it was Iran. And so that's the answer to the question, what are the alternatives? I mean, there are two. There's the Palestinians and there's the Iranians. And there have been bipartisan attempts to reach out to the Palestinians to elevate them into something that they're not, which is a nation state. But Obama was unique in thinking that revolutionary Iran would be somehow a legitimate partner to the United States. And once they had made that decision, which I think was made before they came into office, the prospects of revolution in Iran were very inconvenient, and so he deliberately withheld help, even as the people on the streets of Tehran cried out, as they were shot, as they were abducted, as they were tortured. He said nothing, and you know, then embarked on the journey that became the Obama-era nuclear deal, the Joint Comprehensive course of action, the JCPOA. What that actually means, I don't know. Nobody's ever explained it to me. But that was their goal. And by hook or by crook, by the end of his second term, they got it.
Victoria Coates with us, her book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. The final section, what's next? And to know what's next, we look back a little bit to the first Trump administration and the Abraham Accords, which are often referenced but perhaps not fully understood. What were the Abraham Accords, and why was it such a step forward for the region?
No, it really was the signature extraordinary achievement of President Trump's first term. And as we embark on his second term this year, I think that the hope is that we will return to peace rather than the 15 months of war that we've been through recently. And what President Trump did, he really laid it out in his AIPAC speech in 2016 that, you know, he was going to return to a policy of no daylight with Israel. And we were given another kind of guideline on the National Security Council staff during that period, which was no surprises, that we kept our Israeli colleagues thoroughly informed. They kept us informed. It allowed us to deal with problems in private, not on the pages of the New York Times, which turned out to be a better policy in hindsight. And I think, you know, what then the actions that President Trump took, and it's important to remember these were his decisions. And these are things like moving the embassy at long last from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem, establishing Israeli sovereignty over the Golan Heights. So establishing certainty around Israel's borders and topography. That was critically important. And then finally, by in January of 2020, taking a very strong action against Iran, by ordering the elimination of Qasem Soleimani, the head of the elite Quds Force in the IRGC, responsible for the death of many Americans as recently as a few weeks before his elimination. And that then changed the mindset of our Arab partners. And following that, over the course of 2020, culminating in September, we were able to get to deals with major Muslim-majority countries, UAE and Bahrain, and then shortly thereafter, Morocco, in these very important Abraham Accords deals, which, yes, had a security component, like the ones from quarter century before with Jordan and even further back with Egypt, which were exclusively security. But with the Abraham Accords, there was also an economic component to them. And one of the things that's been the most hopeful to me over the last 15 months is that those accords have endured and the commercial cooperation between the countries has even increased, even during the war.
Final question for Victoria Coates, her book, The Battle for the Jewish State. We have at the moment, Victoria, this very tentative ceasefire between Israel and Hamas. Of course, there was a ceasefire in effect on October 7th as well. We have President Trump taking the White House, President Trump, for the next 4 years, a president who likely won't be withholding weapons or placing embargo on what can go to Israel in their fight. How do you think those two factors change at all the calculus in the region in the next few years?
Oh, I'm hopeful that it's going to be a massive change, because along with not withholding arms to Israel, the thing that President Trump will withhold once again is funding for the Palestinians. The Biden administration has doled out, I think, close to $2 billion at this point to the Palestinians over their term. That is funding President Trump froze in the first year of his first term. I think he's going to freeze it again and, you know, cut off those funds. And more importantly, even than that, cut off funds for the Iranians. He's announced that they're going to be looking at returning to the maximum pressure campaign on Iran. That's critically important. Starve them of funds. They don't have money to send to Hamas and Hezbollah, because if you do let them sell 1.7 million barrels a day of China, or oil to China, rather, they spend that money on their nuclear program and terrorist proxies. They do not spend it on the Iranian people. They do not spend it on curing cancer, as John Kerry assured us in 2015. And so I think, you know, as we move into 2025, despite the many dangers that we face, there are reasons to be very, very hopeful, not just for Israel, but for the United States as well.
Victoria Coates, the book, The Battle for the Jewish State, How Israel and America Can Win. Victoria is the vice president of the Catherine and Shelby Cullum Davis Institute for National Security and Foreign Policy at the Heritage Foundation. Victoria, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Absolutely a pleasure. Thank you, Scott.
Up next, Dr. Eric Hutchinson from Hillsdale's Classics Department talked to us about Augustine and classical culture. I'm Scott Bertram. This is the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Attention hunters, Blackburn Apparel is your local manufacturer of top quality, unique outdoor wear. Hikers, fishermen, or hunters, Blackburn Apparel will have you looking and feeling fantastic. And they have a shop right here in Reading on Crossroads Drive. Blackburn Apparel carries clothing for every outdoorsman, and they also offer a uniquely designed line of accessories and gear. Check it out at shopblackburn.com. Then come buy your selection in the showroom and save on shipping. Blackburn Apparel, shopblackburn.com, or visit the shop at 3058 Crossroads Drive.
Cascade Curations in downtown Reading is a unique destination location. Cascade Curations is a vibrant hub celebrating the creativity and talent of local artists, musicians, and designers. Clothing racks are stocked with upcycled and upscale thrift, as well as new clothing unlike anywhere else. Whether you're seeking beautiful artwork to adorn your home, new music to inspire you, or musical instruments and gear to play, Cascade Curations is a must-visit spot to immerse yourself in Reading's thriving arts and culture scene, located in the Foundry Square next to the
Hi, this is Chuck Kenny, owner of Shasta Gas Propane. 27 years ago, my wife Judy and I started Shasta Gas with the help and under the direction of the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, we believe He is the owner and we are simply the managers. Through the years, we have received many offers from major national corporations to buy Shasta Gas. But our commitment has always been to be and remain locally owned and family operated. Our daughter Karen Wehunt and her husband Jason now manage the daily operations of Shasta Gas and Shasta Shasta Tanks, a new business we started a few years ago. We now have the third generation of family members working in the business. Sunshine Stevens, our granddaughter, and her husband Adam, and our grandson Jason. Our commitment and motto are still the same. Our customers are warm friends. To support locally owned family operated business, please call Shasta Gas Propane at 530-365-3793. That's 530-365-3793.
This Hawaiian mini vacation is brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning. So what does professional office cleaning have to do with relaxing in a tropical paradise? Frankly, nothing. But Maui Bob and the crew want to remind you to be sure to take the time for what's important in this workaday world. Family, friends, and yes, even yourself. And if their professional office cleaning services can help you make that time, give them a call at 221-5868. This Hawaiian mini vacation was brought to your radio by Maui Bob's Office Cleaning, 221-5868.
Welcome back to the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. I'm Scott Bertram. Be sure to find us on X for updated show and guest information. We're at Hillsdale Radio. We're joined by Dr. Eric Hutchinson, who is Associate Professor of Classics and Chairman of our Collegiate Scholars Program here at Hillsdale College. Dr. Hutchinson, thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Conversation today about Augustine and classical culture. We begin by asking you for a very brief biographical sketch of Augustine. Why are we even talking about him today?
Augustine is one of the most significant figures that we have in either Greek or Roman or Christian antiquity. So he's possibly the most or one of the most influential figures whose works we have. We have more of him than almost anyone, maybe than anyone. I don't know for certain, but there are over 5 million words of Augustine that survive, which is an enormous amount. There aren't really any of the other sort of big folks that you've heard of, Homer, Virgil, Cicero. None of these folks even come. We have a lot of Cicero, but none of these folks come close to the amount of Augustine that we have. So just in terms of sheer output alone is impressive, but the quality of the work that survives is what makes it truly significant. Augustine straddles the 4th and 5th centuries AD, born in 354, and dies as Germanic tribes are sort of bearing down on the city of Hippo, where he was bishop in North Africa. Augustine was from Roman North Africa, modern day Algeria, and spent part of his life in Italy, but most of it in Roman North Africa in the province of Numidia. Started out his professional career as a teacher of rhetoric. Then after his conversion or reconversion to Christianity, became hoping to live a sort of monastic life, but then was ordained to the priesthood and eventually to the bishopric, and then spent the remaining decades of his life as a bishop in the city of Hippo, also in Roman North Africa.
So among those 5 million words that we have, what kind of classical literary forms or styles are evident in his writings?
Surprisingly, not too many. The big genre that most listeners will probably be familiar with that Augustine employed is found in the part of his surviving work that's maybe among the least read or certainly the lesser read parts of his output. Early in his literary career after his conversion to Christianity, Augustine wrote a number of philosophical dialogues in the style broadly of Cicero's philosophical dialogues on subjects like the happy life, as I mentioned a moment ago, Augustine was a teacher of rhetoric and was a highly accomplished orator himself, which really is evident in his preaching. There are hundreds of sermons of Augustine that survive. And he also wrote sort of theoretically and didactically on the subject of rhetoric, and specifically Christian rhetoric. So the classical oratorical tradition is something that comes through very strongly in a wide variety of his writings. But at the same time, he was an innovator. So the most famous work of Augustine now is the Confessions. That's the one people are most likely to read. And there aren't really antecedents for what he does there. There are some sort of partial antecedents, like the Meditations of Marcus Aurelius, the Stoic Roman emperor. But it is sui generis. It's a new sort of hybrid literary genre that Augustine more or less invents. And so the way that classical influence comes through in Augustine's writings is in other kinds of ways, rather than through the imitation of form in particular.
What role did Augustine see for classical culture within a Christian society?
That's a good question. And the answer to that varies depending on both when in his life we're talking about and what kind of classical culture we're referring to in particular. Early in his life, again, he wrote this set of philosophical dialogues that are very self-consciously classicizing. Later in his life, he seems kind of irritated that he did that, though, and wants to be a lot more, I think, reticent about the degree to which he sort of endorses, you know, classical culture as a whole. You read something like the early books of the Confessions, and you think about Roman education in particular and the type of education to which he was subject. He's very down on it and very critical of it. At the same time, there is a praiseworthy status accorded to particular strains of ancient philosophy that he makes use of and talks about in very complimentary ways. And implicitly, there are sort of modes of thought and expression throughout the Confessions and elsewhere that are clearly influenced by classical models like Virgil, for example, even when he is sort of on the surface of the text being critical of something like Virgil's Aeneid. Mm-hmm. So it's a really complicated and for that reason fascinating subject, because the way in which classical influences play out in the works of Augustine is highly variegated.
Talking with Dr. Eric Hutchinson from the Classics Department here at Hillsdale College about Augustine and classical culture. You told us a bit about City of God earlier, mentioned Confessions there. What is it about Confessions that endures? Why is it so widely read? And how does Augustine address classical culture inside of there?
I think the Confessions is so widely read now because it strikes readers as modern in a way that a lot of other works from the ancient world don't. Augustine in the Confessions is concerned with examining his own interior life in a way that we don't really see very often at all in ancient writers. His hopes, his fears, right? His regrets, all these kinds of things that you have a sense that a real person is speaking to you from the other side of the page that can be difficult sometimes to find in a lot of ancient writers, in part because that's not really what they're interested in. It's sort of putting forward an explicitly personal voice that's telling you about themselves. But Augustine is, though not for its own sake, the Confessions is in many respects a long prayer. So he's talking to God. And this is one way in which we can kind of see him tweaking the ancient genre of the dialogue. It is a sort of dialogue where he speaks to God and we get all of these words from Augustine to God. And the way that God answers him back in the Confessions is through all the sort of quotations of and allusions to the Bible that occur throughout the work. So it is a kind of dialogue which Augustine wants to be used by others as a model for their own conversions and their own turning to God.
You mentioned his vast influence in the theological world. So let me close by asking about that. How did he influence subsequent Christian thinkers? How is he viewed now by modern scholars and theologians?
Augustine's influence on subsequent theologians, writers, philosophers is about as vast as his own literary output I mentioned before that he's easily the most important ancient Christian writer in the entirety of the Middle Ages, but that's also true of the Reformation.
Mm-hmm.
And that continues to be true now. I suspect more books are written, when we're thinking specifically of ancient figures, more books are going to be written on Augustine and Augustinian thought now than probably any other figure from the ancient world. This is the case both on specific or technical issues of theology, so Trinitarian theology, for example, and on these more personal questions about things like prayer, how the self relates to God. As I mentioned before, he does strike, especially in the Confessions, does strike readers as sort of peculiarly modern in a way that most other ancient writers don't. And so that, even what you might want to call that sort of almost existential dimension of life as it's actually lived, mm-hmm. Christian life as it's actually lived, I think continues to have a lot of, to speak very powerfully to readers now across time and space. And I think that's a testament to the fact that in Augustine, we really are dealing with the sort of rarest of figures whose thought and personality are so capacious that almost everyone sees some aspect of himself in him or feels as if he's being addressed by this, in certain ways, very alien figure from a very long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. And I think that's why he continues and will continue to exercise an attraction for readers from a variety of backgrounds.
Dr. Eric Hutchinson, Associate Professor of Classics and Chairman of our Collegiate Scholars Program at Hillsdale College. We talk about Augustine and classical culture. Dr. Hutchinson, thanks so much for joining us here on the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Thanks for having me on.
That will wrap up this edition of the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour. Our thanks to Jeremiah Regan, Victoria Coates, and Eric Hutchinson. Remember, you can hear new episodes every week on this station. You also can find extended versions of some of our interviews or listen anytime to the podcast. Find it at podcast.hillsdale.edu or wherever you get your audio. Until next week, I'm Scott Bertram, and this has been the Radio Free Hillsdale Hour.
Jones's Fort Gun Shop, serving Shasta County for over 50 years. It's a new year, and we are very excited about the new leadership for our nation. Jones's Fort is offering Hornady 5.56 NATO 75 grain tap precision ammunition on sale now for just $199 a case. That's right, $199 a case. This ammo delivers phenomenal performance for your AR-15 style rifle. Jones's Fort, serving all your firearm needs since 1962. And yes, Jones's Fort will pay for your ammo background check.
KCNR invites you to join us the second Friday of the month starting at 8 a.m. for the Gorman Law Hour featuring local attorney Patrick Gorman, a legal expert when it comes to injured workers, compensation claims, and employee claims. So, if you have a legal question or just wonder whether or not you have a legal issue or problem, talk to Patrick Gorman, attorney at law, during the Gorman Law Hour starting at 8 a.m. the second Friday of the month on KCNR.
For over 50 years, House of Realty has provided experienced and effective advice to its real estate clients. Experts in residential, commercial, and investment property, we have the knowledge and tools to assist you with all of your real estate needs. Family owned and operated since 1965, we have been an active part of the Shasta County community for generations. Please call House of Realty today at 241-8300. A reputation for excellence since 1965.
Good morning, Reading. This is Rick Hughes, host of The Flatline. Heard every Sunday morning on KCNR 96.5 FM at 7 a.m. in the morning. Just want you to know that God has given us two ends, one to think with and one to sit on. And success in life depends on which one you use. It's heads you win and tails you lose. Come join me on The Flatline and learn about God's tremendous problem-solving device. 7 a.m. every Sunday morning, 96.5 FM, KCNR.
This is Carl Bott and Ted Leidy. We want to invite you to our new show, Man Up, the fourth Thursday of each month, right here on KCNR 96.5 FM and 1460 AM.
Man Up, 6 to 7 p.m., where we explore the lost art of being a man.
Spirits, cigars, and hit the ground running when you get up in the morning. That's what Man Up's going to be about.
Oh, don't forget motorcycles, guns, and hard work every day.
And those things that men talk about when women aren't around.
That's right. Even cooking sometimes.
People, places, and things.
Serving your family, your community, and your country.
Man Up. Fourth Thursday of each month from 6 to 7 p.m. right here on Free Fire Radio.
The news from Town Hall is brought to you on KCNR Shasta Reading by Shasta Regional Medical Center. Your life, your health, your choice. Shasta Regional Medical Center.